You might remember this morning PK Jha talked about the difficulty in getting local communities involved in participating in a problem, and I think our next speaker might be able to address that question, that important question. Ramchandra Mishra is with the Ministry of Urban Development and Poverty Alleviation with the Government of India. Would you please welcome Ramchandra Mishra?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really delighted to be here to participate in such a stimulating talk on such a complex issues encompassing so many sectors that it gives an exciting opportunity to learn from each other. I really congratulate Magill World Platform for bringing so many people from such a diverse field and background in this very room. I would be talking this afternoon on governing by social innovation and civic participation by giving some illustrations from what's happening in India. When we talk of governance, there are two instruments at the disposal of the government, and that is the policy and the institutions. And the role of policies and institutions, how important they are in shaping the outcome, but it's very beautifully have been stated by Muhammad Yunus. In the morning, we talked about him quite a lot. I'll just once more quote from him. Poverty is an artificial creation. It doesn't belong to human civilization. And we can change that. We can make people come out of poverty. The only things we have to do is to redesign our institution and policies. In the context of India, our institutions and policies have come a long way. Starting from the early 1950s, immediately after our independence, when the emphasis was primarily on the role of public sectors, and they were celebrated as the commanding heights of economy, to the early 90s, the decades of 90s, which are known in the economic history as the decade for liberalization, which unleashed the energy of private entrepreneurs in stimulating a very high rate of growth. The recent decade, we have moved further from there, and there's a lot of emphasis being laid on the harnessing the energy of social entrepreneurs in delivery of social services to remove poverty, promote equity, improve quality of life to common citizens. The social entrepreneurship is basically about creating business models revolving around low-cost products and services and the realization that the social progress and profits are not mutually exclusive. For social entrepreneurs to succeed, we need a very strong partnership with the government and civil society apart from the supporting policies. We need a really positive and constructive hand-holding and partnership between the civil society, government, business, which can use the resources of the society and the nation to build better communities and society. This graph is briefly indicates as to the investment which has been made in India in the public-private partnership in the last about a decade and a half. It's primarily on account of investments in infrastructure sector, because the investment which has taken in the social sector through the public-private partnership has started very, very recently. I pick up some success stories from different sectors. Some of them are from urban sector, and taking example from energy, water supply, solid waste management, slum rehabilitation, air quality. Rural sector, some very great initiatives have been done by the government for the common service centers and electronic benefit transfer models. And the another important example which is overarches all the sectors is right to information, which has taken place in the year 2005 in India. The common thread between all these examples, you would find that the services are in the public domain, and government is primarily is responsible for the delivery. And there, in these examples, a unique partnership between government, entrepreneur, and civil society has been tried to deliver those services. And they are based on business model, except on the examples on air quality and RTI, which is basically an example which demonstrates the power of collective action on the part of the civil society in changing policies of the government. On the energy sector, I've just taken an example from Vijayawada municipality, they were facing the problem of a huge expenditure in maintaining their street light system. There were a lot of breakdowns. The equipments were not energy efficient, and there was a lot of public dissatisfaction against the municipality. And therefore, they decided to join hands with a private entrepreneur to set up the entire public lighting system, street lighting system, with the help of the private entrepreneur. And that's how it happened. They picked up one energy saving company, and this energy saving company was given the exclusive right to maintain and operate the public street lighting system of the city. They were to make all the investment, no cost to the municipality. And they were selected through a bid process under which they gave a guarantee of energy saving of 41.5%. And about 92% of that saving was to be credited to the public, to the private entrepreneur to recover its cost of investment. And the remaining went to the municipality. So the municipality not only saved money, not only saved its cost, which was investing earlier in maintaining a system which was not running well, but also got an extra income. Entrepreneur made a profit, and there was a good energy-efficient lighting system which was provided by the private entrepreneur. There was a energy saving of 4.4 million units. There were improved quality of street lighting. There was a saving to the corporation, and they didn't have to invest money, additional income to them, and a additional income to the energy saving company, that is for the private entrepreneur. This is another example of a water supply system in Nagpur. The city's population is 2.5 million, its citizens were getting water supply only 4 hours a day. And it was very erratic. It was characterized by leakage. And there was a heavy losses and leakages of the waters from the network. And therefore, the municipality decided to join hands with the private entrepreneur to give them 25 years exclusive right for operation and maintenance of the water supply system. And they were again here, private investor, private operator was make all the investments. And they were, on behalf of the municipality, they collected the fee from the consumers, and part of that fee was retained by the operator to recover its investment as well as the cost of the operations and maintenance. With this change, the water supply, which was only for about 4 hours, it became 24 hours a day, the water supply became available. The water consumption slightly increased because of the better availability. The average pressure, which was there only 2 to 5 meters, it went up to 10 to 12 meters, which saved a lot of energy because otherwise people were using motors for lifting the pipe on higher floors of the building. The leakages came down from 69% to 33%. And the billing, which was only for about 338 cubic meter increase, it was 137 cubic meter, it increased to 338 cubic meters. Here again, at no cost to the municipality, and there was savings and better service to the community. This is another example of waste processing plant. The solid waste management was a very big issue in the Rajkot municipality, and it was thrown open in the open landfills, which became a health hazard. And therefore, again, a similar model was followed, where a private entrepreneur was identified, and they were given 30 acres of land to set up their solid waste processing plant at their own cost and investment, and no cost to the municipality. They segregated all the products, and the byproducts after processing, they were in the form of biofertilizers, green coal, eco bricks, and recyclable environment friendly products. And by selling these products in the market, they were able to recover their cost of operation as well as the investment. This was the scene before and after the that landfill and how after the plant was set up. This is another example of a slum rehabilitation based on a business model in case of a Mumbai, which is one of the most populated city of India, and nearly 50% of its population lives in slums. The earlier, there were several attempts to resolve this problem. In early 70s, they tried to demolish and remove them, though the people came back again. Then, subsequently, they again gave them the basic facilities, and improving their housing, it also didn't work. And again, the effort to regularize them, give them the basic municipal services, facilities, and water, this also didn't work. Then government constituted a committee, we tend to do the problem, and they come up with the recommendation that nearly 80% of the slums people, these dwellers, can be rehabilitated at the same place. And by using land as a resource, they recommended a business model in which a private developer has to join hands in constructing dwelling units from the slum dwellers. A higher FSI, floor space index, was allowed to them. Instead of one in the general cases, they were given 3 times more. And after giving the free dwelling units to the slum dwellers, in the proportion to almost similar proportion, they were allowed to sell in the open market. Out of that sale proceeds, they recovered the cost of their entire construction and rehabilitation up to the slum dweller. They also provided a number of social and basic facilities like dispensaries, school, and all these developers as a part of the project. This is what the different entitlements was given to each one of them. And through this scheme, 107,000 dwelling units have been constructed in Mumbai till the end of August 2009, and the project is still on. This is how the slums were there. And one thing this private developer had to do, which is shown here in the phase two, that they had to, for a temporary accommodation, they had to construct a transit camp So this is the transit camp which is shown, and how after completing the whole project, how this whole environment changed and how does it look like. Now I come to this air quality example of Delhi, the capital. This picture shows compares the and the seriousness of the pollution which was there in Delhi and the lung of a person in Delhi as compared to a neighboring state in Himachal. It indicates the how serious was the pollution problem in Delhi. These are the sum of the data which indicates the quality of the air, which has really gone very, very poor and was reflecting into a large number of respiratory diseases. Now, a lot of NGOs, they came together and with the help of a World Bank study, which has found that there is a one death per hour in Delhi because of this high level of air pollution. They came together and started a very concerted campaign. And it was joined by different sections of the society, students, economists, eminent citizens, and also the media. The poster campaigns were taken up. And ultimately, in the year 1998, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor that the entire transport system of Delhi must be converted into a CNG, compressed natural gas, it should be operated. And today, we have more than 100,000 of vehicles running on the streets of Delhi, all of them on CNG. This shows how the quality has improved after introduction of and implementation of this policy. This has been rated as one of the top 12 policies in the world by one of the international organizations which have carried a study in changing the public policies in the public sector, in the government. Coming back to the now I have just two more examples from the rural sectors. This is a very ambitious project of Common Service Center as a part of the national e-governance initiated by the Department of Information Technology by the Government of India. And the objective is to set up 100,000 common service centers to cover 600 villages all over the country to provide all the basic services, government to citizens, and all private to citizen services through these common service centers. And they work on the business model, and it's and therefore, it's not only rolling out IT infrastructure to cover the entire country, but also to create almost 100,000 plus businesses in the rural areas. It's based on the bottom-up approach and also the social inclusion as it ensures the participation of the people at the village level. The mechanism has been set up in place is that at the village level, there are village-level entrepreneurs and who look after and operate and manage one common service center which serviced 5 to 6 villages. At the district level, we have a service center agency which is selected through a competitive bid. This is the private entrepreneur which is selected, and that bid is selected based on how much revenue they want, minimum revenue which they want from the government to keep their business sustainable. The state level agency is designated by the government to select the service center agencies for different areas and also to give the policy support and other infrastructure support to run these common service centers in the villages. National level agency is also there, which basically monitors the role and supports the rollout of these centers. These are all broadband connected centers, primarily through wireless connectivity. And the last mile connectivity is ensured, it is to be ensured by the service center agency. The government also has taken a special effort through one of the public sector enterprises, that is Videsh Sanchar Nigam Limited, to ensure that the broadband connectivity is available throughout the country, and a sum of rupees 5.5 billion is being invested to make that happen. The business model is, as I said, that the revenue stream comes from the selling of services from the government to citizens and this business to citizens. Now, government to citizen, these services, they take a very long time to bring them about, and therefore the government to make these service centers economically viable and sustainable, they gave a guarantee, assured guarantee, that till such time they are able to generate one third of the revenue from the government to citizen services, the government would make sure that make that much of payment to ensure that one third of the revenue is coming from the government to citizen. And in actually, and this is the parameter which they had to bid at the time of competitive bid as to how much revenue do they expect from the government, and based on that, the party, the private entrepreneur, is selected. And actually, when the bids have been invited for a number of centers, it has been found that the support required by them is much less than one third. The government obviously has played a very, very major role in making this scheme a success. And this is the spread of the centers all over the country, and this is the current progress in the last 4 years. This is another example of serving, delivering social services in the rural part of the country. This is a pilot project which has been taken in the Andhra Pradesh, the state of Andhra Pradesh. Here, this is an example of partnership between the government and the banking system. Here is an example which where the banks have come forward and is helping the government in delivering certain social services. The issue was basically that the government is supposed to deliver certain social program, and one of the most important one is the National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, which guarantees 100 days employment per household per financial year, and also an age-old pension, 200 rupees per month to distribute, are distributed throughout the country to in all the rural areas. Now, the problem in the implementation of these schemes was that the area is so huge, the numbers are so large, it is extremely difficult to supervise and manage them. There are long delays of these benefits reaching to the people, and worst is still, the money wasn't going to the right people. There was a ghost list, somebody else takes the money in the name of somebody else, and there was no way to find out. And therefore, there was a huge leakage of these resources. The new approach, where the banks were brought into the picture with the help of the smart card technology, where they have to be all these beneficiaries, and they were given a smart card with the biometric identities, and with the help of that, it was made sure that the money goes not only instantaneously through the electronic transfer, but also goes to the right person. There were camps which were organized by the banks with the help of the government officials, and particulars of these people were taken up, and smart cards were issued, bank accounts were opened, and business correspondents and customer service providers, they were appointed in each areas, they were trained. The government gave the list of beneficiaries along with the amount which they has to be paid to the banks. Bank, they credited it in their account, and it was dispersed at the doorsteps by those customer service representatives and bank correspondents in pre-designated areas after verifying their biometric identities with the help of those smart cards. These are the connectivity which they had provided to make it happen. This is the numbers of the progress which has been made so far in Andhra Pradesh and which is being scaled throughout the country. This Right to Information Act is another important thing which has happened in India. with the help of a civil society which had a very concerted campaign, and finally they succeeded and the government enacted this Right to Information Act in year 2005, and all public authorities and government department they were obliged to give any information relating to any decision making to anybody who asked for it within a period of 30 days, and it made a lot of difference where the citizens they influenced and changed the policies by getting the right information. Here is an example was a person made sure that a metro station came to his place which was earlier cancelled because the land was disputed, and he proved with the Right to Information Act by using that and collecting the information with the help of the court that the land really belonged to the government and the station was restored. I have come too close to my presentation. Sorry, I have exceeded. But before I close, I just wanted to flag one issue coming from the urban sector and the Ministry of Urban Development. In the morning also it was mentioned that one of the biggest challenges which we are going to face in the next few decades is that of urbanization, and is closely linked with the health issues. In fact, basically when we talk about impact of development on health, it basically gets, we talk about, effectively talking about impact of urbanization on health. And we really, there is a real need to sensitize and create awareness in among various stakeholders, and particularly the urban designers, policymakers, businesses, and civil society and citizens. And one way to do that, I thought I'll just flag it for discussion. Tomorrow also there is a full session on this, sustainable places and communities, as to think of developing a health index for cities, which will generate a lot of debate and a lot of awareness and information and sensitize all the various stakeholders. Some of the factors which could be reflected on the index I have listed. There could be much more. There could be a much more bigger debate, but perhaps I thought that could be an important issue to be flagged for the MWP. Thank you very much. Thank you.